The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hi, folks. I have the pleasure of being joined by Rupert Lowe MP, the political insurrectionist who's recently started the Restore Britain Party, much to the chagrin of everyone in the establishment. I can't help but notice that you have a range of opinions from Zach Polansky to Nigel Farage, who are all essentially on the same Blairite point when it comes to the state of immigration, the country, the state itself, and the way that things should be run. And you seem to be the only person outside of that consensus. And so it's drawn a lot of ire towards you. How are things going?
Well, we announced that we were going to set up as a political party because, as you know, Restore Britain was a movement, which I think has served its purpose. I wanted it to unite. It has to some extent united, and it's meant that I've got to know the Tories quite well. They put me on the Public Accounts Committee, to their credit. That's allowed me to see the extent of the waste that's going on within the civil service with no apparent care or respect for taxpayers' money. And I've sort of done 2 weeks of the rape gang inquiry, Carl, which I have to tell you was incredibly harrowing. I don't think in my life I've ever heard such horrific stories. And I
can we just pause on that?
It's quite clear to me, but I think it's important. I get this point over to you. Yeah. It's important because when I was sitting listening to these testimonies, and we will be, Graham Smith, the barrister, will be writing a report on everything. We interviewed lots of victims, lots of people who were explaining the sort of reasons why it's happening and why nobody's doing anything about it. We've had a sort of cross section, politicians, medics, legal people. So we've discussed everything. But while I was in there, I thought, how can a state fail its people for 25 years so consistently? And that's both, it's all the existing political establishment. So they were all there. Whether they knew it was happening or not, I don't know. But the fact is, it has been happening on a grand scale across the country everywhere. Despite what Sadiq Khan says, it's happening in London as we sit here speaking. It's linked to organised crime. It's linked to county lines. I'm not so interested in the ethnic origin of people doing it. I'm interested in how it's happened. It's about right and wrong. It's about a state that is allowing an evil to happen and to grow. Right under its very nose. So when I was sitting in those hearings, I came to the conclusion, how can anyone ever vote Labour again? You know, they virtually, to a man, voted against a statutory inquiry into this and have consistently resisted it, trying to claim it's a siloed issue. Well, it's not a siloed issue. This is a systemic issue across Britain, and it needs to be dealt with. You've got the Tories who've been in power for a long time while this was growing. Nothing done about that. You've got the Lib Dems who sit there skating over the surface. And frankly, people like Zach Polansky, who mentioned just now, he's just a joke. I mean, if we follow Zach Polansky's politics and his economic policies, the country will disappear in a nanosecond. It's just la-la land, frankly. So I decided while I was in there that really the British people don't have anything on the smorgasbord of political parties which is going to deliver for them. Now, I'm only one man. I've got a fantastic young team around me. And unlike Nigel, I like to give my team a chance to speak. And, you know, if that means we end up with some controversy, I don't mind that. I think we want a party of young. The young people have a stake in our society and they should be involved. And, I'm as I said in my, the response to our video we did on the farm, which has had over 40 million views worldwide, and I think it's triggered something in other Anglo-Saxon nations across the world. They call me an elderly gentleman. I like to think I'm a young elderly gentleman, but you know, unfortunately, you can't defy the years, Carl. So look, I decided really, we've got to win by 29. I've got to stand up. I am what you see. There's nothing complicated about me. I'm one of four boys, the oldest of four boys. I've lived my life honestly. I've worked all my life. I've built up everything I've got. And I don't want to see the country descend into a sort of Fabian catastrophe where injustices on the scale of the rape gang injustices have been happening. I just don't want to see that. So I'm there. If people don't want to vote for me, I'm you know, happy to accept the fact that's not what they want, and they want more of what they've currently got. But if they want change, I think we genuinely offer them an opportunity to vote for a new political party, which we're going to have people from outside Parliament going into Parliament, people who've done things, people who've contributed to their communities. So I've now got to turn my attention to finding 649 other people and make sure they're on the electoral ballot paper at the next election, because I think that way we genuinely have a chance of restoring what used to be Britain, which is very much not Britain now.
So, I mean, there are so many things to talk about, aren't there? I would say the first thing is it is remarkable how many members the party has had in such a short period of time.
We went through 70,000 members yesterday.
I'm aware. I mean,
it's just quite staggering how people are supporting us. And I encourage them not only to support us, but to spread the word, because the media, as you know, blacked me out. You know,
of course.
GB News, who set themselves up as a sort of an impartial broadcaster, haven't had me on since Nigel politically assassinated me. I virtually never hear from the BBC. They didn't cover the rape gang inquiry at all. Mm. So I think people have got to now wake up and understand that it's not only the political parties that aren't serving them. The media isn't serving them.
Well, it's the system itself.
And the essence of a free, as you know, a free democracy is the media must act as the safeguard for the people in challenging the politicians. But the problem is they're all one big club. And part of the reason they cut me out is I'm not interested in going to have, you know, drinks with them and getting drunk in the bar late at night and doing all sorts of things that they think are okay. That's not what I want to do. I've got, you know, I like to walk around my farm, look at my crops. I like to talk to people who work for me and work with me. And I've got better things to do than you know, cruise around with a bunch of lightweights. So I think you can see it now. It's just so obvious. And if the people can't see it, then open your eyes, because it's there. So it's there. But unfortunately, I for them, thanks to Elon Musk, and thanks to social media, and thanks to the free speech that he's basically now embedded, and Zuckerberg is following, so our following on Facebook's actually gone well through our following on X. So we've got our own platform. We're much bigger than most newspapers now. So I urge people, spread the word. This isn't going to happen if people don't want it. Mm-hmm. And if they want it, as I say, you can't rely on a small group of people to do this. Everybody's got to do some heavy lifting now.
So
everybody's got to challenge petty bureaucracy. Everyone's got to challenge, you know, the rules, the regulations, all of the things that are oppressing us. Challenge it. Do not do it legally,
of course,
but do not allow these petty bureaucrats and these people who are supposed to be serving you. Don't allow them to push you around. Mm. They're your servant, not your master.
Well, this has always been Bertrand Russell's complaint about bureaucracy. The individual is at the mercy of a system that is supposed to serve him, but has no incentive to. Every time you walk into a bureaucrat's office, you're a problem that he wishes wasn't there. He's not bound by profits. He's not bound by productivity. He is, in fact, hampered by those things. And the second that you require something from the bureaucracy, the bureaucrat just wants you to go away. So this is always, and this is an old English complaint about bureaucracy, actually. You know, it's very well made by Bertrand Russell.
But I think what's changed, Carl, is that in days gone by, I think there was a vocational drive for people to go into public service.
Yes.
First of all, I think you had decent people who did try and serve, who did try and do their best. But the problem is that's all gone. And I think what's happened is with the proliferation of the state, the proliferation of all the regulations and all the rules and all the things that tie us down and damage our quality of life, people have lost sight of what the state is there for. It is there to serve. That's its job. And the problem is, if you watch state getting out of control, as we've seen in the USSR, in the end it implodes because it becomes so inefficient that the only way to survive is to start lying to the state. And if people start lying to the state, then they get into the habit of lying. And once you get into the habit of lying, and this is actually what brought the USSR down more than anything, is that the only way to survive was to lie. Well, I don't want to live in a society like that. I want to live in a society where people are honest with each other. We can tell the truth. We aren't punished for telling the truth. But unfortunately, I think it was summed up the other day by a young kid, and they say out of the mouths of babes and sucklings, but he said to me, why is it that everybody who seems to work hard and do their best is punished? And everyone who seems to do nothing and not contribute is protected.
Mm.
I said to him, well, I think you're right, but I don't know the answer to that because it seems like putting the cart before the horse. This whole thing's bonkers. And that's where we are. This was a kid. He could see it himself. So if he can see it, surely everybody else can see it. That's what we've got to change.
I mean, it's very clear that it must be that the villains are in charge.
I think we're probably in the hands of organized crime, Carl.
I agree. I mean, it has to be that the people in charge are villains, for the honest, hardworking people to be the ones who get punished. I mean,
yeah.
This is Solzhenitsyn's measure of what was a communist state, when law-abiding people are punished and criminals are set free.
Which we've got now, I think.
I mean, well, literally on day one, Keir Starmer opened the prisons,
yeah,
which is a typical communist tactic. So anyway, what I want to talk about, though, is the remarkable blooming of the Restore Britain movement and party in the last, what's it been, 6 days now?
We launched it on Friday in Great Yarmouth, fittingly,
yeah,
at the coldest venue I've ever been at. I was actually shivering while I was giving my speech. The heating, whether it was working or not, I don't know, but the east wind was cutting through the building, and it was so cold. I did actually contemplate speaking in my overcoat, but I decided that would have been discourteous. So it was so cold, but we got a huge turnout, and I thought we had to launch it in Great Yarmouth, really. That
yeah.
was,
well,
that
of
was
course.
The place to do it. And since then, we've had the most incredible support. We did a video on the farm, which took us 3 or 4 hours, and that seems to have gone viral around the world. I don't think it's probably just in Britain that we've got this malaise. Mm. I think this is something that obviously cuts across all Anglo-Saxon countries. So we've had people from, obviously, the Antipodes. We've had people from Canada, people from America particularly has gone, they've watched that video,
yeah,
which is where they called me an elderly gentleman on his farm. And we literally, I think we just spoke common sense. And I that's what my entire philosophy is founded on. And I think common sense is what we need the return of in spades. So if people agree, I'm going to try and give them an option. If they don't agree, I think we're in deep trouble if we don't
well, if
get
they don't
something
agree,
new,
they can
new
vote
by
for the
29.
Greens. If they don't agree, they've got Zach Polanski.
We've got Zach Polanski. Well, good luck to them.
Yeah,
good luck.
Exactly.
Good luck to them.
But what I found remarkable about this, though, is the speed and the nerve that this has touched. Because there's actually quite an interesting comparison in Jeremy Corbyn's Your Party. Because Jeremy Corbyn represents the sort of antipode of the right, that what we're doing here, in that it's a segment of, well, essentially communists in the country who have a very popular figure in Jeremy Corbyn. And he launched his Your Party. I mean, it's been quite catastrophic in many ways. but we'll leave that to the side. But they very quickly got about 80,000 members, but that took them about a month to get to that stage, whereas you've got 70,000 in the first week.
When we had some before, I mean, Restore Britain had a bedrock of supporters, but we've had, I mean, we were, you know, for two or three days, we were putting on 10,000 a day.
Yeah.
And I'm absolutely delighted. I feel humbled by the response. Mm. And I can assure people that we will do our very best. I mean, look, I've got a young team. Yeah. My grandmother had a saying, you know, the young are able, the old are wise. Well, I provide the wisdom, but I've got a great young team who provide the ability, because, you know, I've come from the era, Carl, where when I was educated, we had the Gestetner machine, and I'm now running to keep up with all this digital technology and AI and everything else. But we're just about holding our own. But I've got a great team, and their ability and their knowledge of the digital revolution eclipses mine. And without them, I don't think I would be able to do what I'm doing. But so I provide the wisdom and plot the course, and with their help, I hope we can do that for the British people. That's what we've got to try and do.
So I think a lot of people would be interested in understanding party structure, the the possibility of local branches, how they can get involved, how they can come and help.
Well, I think the most important thing, and I've been working on it for the last couple of days since I've had a bit of time, it's parliamentary recess, although I was in court, which we can talk about on Tuesday, all day. So literally I was there all day taking on the independent complaint and grievance scheme. Mm. So we can talk about that in a minute if you want. So my primary task now, and we have got lots of local councillors who want to defect to us, which some already have, some are talking to us. I think they can see what we're trying to do and embrace it. So I would encourage them, I mean, come to us. It may take us time because we are a small team. We are recruiting, but with recruitment comes risk. If you're not careful, you end up importing people who are trying to do you harm. So we have to be very careful with that. But I mean, on the local level, come to us. We've obviously got Great Yarmouth First, and I see this bottom-up approach from people taking control of their local councils and the top-down approach, which to me is the most important thing, because if we don't get control of Parliament, it's very difficult to repeal what needs to be repealed, and it's very difficult, and I don't want to legislate, but if we have to legislate, that gives you the power to do it. Mm. And we need to control it. And you can see how powerful it is when Labour literally rammed through the most ludicrous statute.
Yep.
And there's really very little that you can do. You know, when you go into the lobby that you're going to be voted down by 350 to 120 it can be a different number, but they always win.
Yeah.
A job, first of all, I think, is to encourage people who've done something in their communities, who feel the same way as us, who are businessmen, who are doctors, who are scientists, who are people with expertise in the digital revolution, in cryptocurrency, come forward, make yourselves known, and let's get a slate of 649 other people. Mm. I've said I'll stand in Great Yarmouth again, who share our vision, who want to change things for the British people for the better. That to me is the most important part of it. Meanwhile, those people who feel they can help locally, please do make yourselves known. Come and help us. If you are a local councillor, come and join us. You're very welcome to do that. And, you know, if you feel driven to help with this change, we need help. As I said, we are a small team. Yeah. You cannot expect, and this is often, I think, something the British people have done, is they love to comment. They've all got a view. A bit like when I was in football, everybody's got a view.
Yeah.
But actually, you put them in the seat where they've got to actually make the decisions. It's a lot more difficult than they think.
So
I think let's not just have a view.
Yes.
Let's all start doing some heavy lifting, because this isn't going to happen if a small group of people try and do this. This is only going to happen, and that's why I like the term movement, if a movement of people who want their country back, who don't feel they're being properly governed, decide they want change.
This is why I'm particularly interested in a local branch structure, because what I think is needed is the deputation of your authority to a branch chair and a small administrative body, you know, a local treasurer and whatnot, in order to be able to begin organizing activists so they can get leaflets printed, so they can go leafleting for you, so they can go and spread the word manually in their local community and show people, look, we're serious about this. This is a
well, Great Yarmouth First is the model. So we're at the moment, as you know, the existing incumbents tried to, they've cancelled the elections once. They tried to cancel them again. We did have a protest in Great Yarmouth on Saturday about it. And now the government has, I think, seen the error of their ways, and we are actually going to have the elections. So,
there was another U-turn.
So Great Yarmouth First, I think, is a blueprint. So we've got nine county councillors standing in Great Yarmouth. And as you know, the Labour government's trying to destroy the current structure of local government, which I completely disagree with. I mean, making local government bigger and bigger just means there's less and less accountability for the people.
Correct.
So what we want is Great Yarmouth. If we can get, well, I think we've got seven already selected. We get another two candidates. Some spoke at our event on Friday, and spoke beautifully. I mean, they share our vision. So if we can get nine standing Great Yarmouth and win all nine of those seats, I think we can then help other people, to your point, who want to do the same in their constituency across the country. And then we can start to get bottom-up change. But the most important thing, which we have to turn our attention to, is the top-down change.
I think that these things are directly interlinked, though, aren't they? You to get the top-down change, you have to be powerful at the bottom, I think.
Exactly. The bottom, there's far more people at the bottom. But the people at the bottom can't flourish if the oxygen is all being sucked out at the top.
Exactly. So is there a mechanism for people to begin setting up local branches of
Restore? Well, I think send us messages. Yeah. Be a little bit patient because we can't do it in a nanosecond, but we've got people on it.
Right.
And we are going to get some structures set up.
Right.
Okay. So, I mean, we appreciate that's important too.
Yes.
But the most important thing, I think, is to make sure we get 649 other people on.
I think that this
on
is
the next ballot paper for a general election.
I think this is how you find them, though. If you find competent local organisers in the various regions of the country, allow them to build a branch, then I think that they can provide you with those experienced and committed people that you're looking for.
Well, Great Yarmouth First will be the model. Yes. That I haven't got time to get involved in Great Yarmouth First. We've now got a team of people down there. As you said, treasurer, great guy.
Yeah.
We've got a team of people who are literally on the ground doing it.
And other people
can do that. We can show them how to do that.
Yes.
In the same way that when we come to stand in the general election, we can show them how to use social media. We can show that we can help them in that respect. But if they're known in their local community, I want to delegate the power to them to be able to, you know, communicate with people who know them and explain what we're doing and let them run. We can't do everything. I'm not a central planner. I bloody hate central planning.
That's the point I'm trying to make.
I like to delegate power.
But they need a mechanism to be able to say, right, okay, I've signed the contract or whatever it is you need to do, and say, right, we're going to set this branch up in Gloucester, in Oxford, in Swindon, in, you know, Derby, wherever it is. You know, people need...
They can replicate what we've done. Well, we'll show them how to do it.
So
that's why it's so important we get Great Yarmouth First right now, and then we can show other people how to do it.
But I'm getting messages every day, which are literally, how can I help? Like, what can I do for Rupert?
We are so grateful for people coming forward.
But they need something to be able to do, because there's a lot of energy at the moment. You need to harness it. So I would say, you know... Put someone in charge of a particular email address or something like that, and say, look, when someone
we've had
comes
so in, many emails, Carl, I can't tell you.
I mean,
we are literally having to bring people in just to respond to the emails. And I would say this, it's a bit, if they trust us, which I hope they begin to do, then help us, give us a bit of time. If you can start to do things yourselves, start to do them. It's common sense, really.
Yes.
And we will then provide you with everything that we've done and show you how to do it. And Great Yarmouth First will be the model. But I think people get themselves down a one-way street. I get people going, I don't like your policy on the death penalty. I don't like your policy on this. Well, people aren't going to like every policy. No. What they've got to like is the principle of what we stand for. And within that, we can then talk about the policy. And as you know, our membership, there is a mechanism whereby not only can people put forward policy, but we can also get our members to vote on it. So we hopefully don't just impose policy views. So taking the death penalty, I mean, my opinion is somebody like Axel Rudakabana or the Manchester bomber, who are beyond doubt guilty of killing other innocent young people, I see no point in allowing them to spend and languish in prison for years. Okay. I would exercise the death penalty.
Well, what's worse?
But I will accept other people's view if they don't agree with me. People like Lucy Letby, I've been through that. I think that's a very much a... I mean, David Davis tells me she's innocent. So that is a very different case. That is not an open and shut case. Axel Rudakabana, completely open and shut. So that's my opinion. But I accept the majority. I am, in that way, I'm a Democrat. But I think we've got to start to have punishment for criminals. I think people who... And we've got my favourite policy paper coming out, Carl. An Englishman's home is his castle. You're going to love it.
I know.
So that's coming out fairly shortly. That's another document on top of the detain and deport, which where we go into the immigration issue in great depth. We've done one on the British pub, and we've got An Englishman's Home is His Castle. Now, we've got to start to punish people who damage the interests of other people, steal from them, hurt them physically. You know, and some of the sentences that are being handed down for rape now are just a farce.
Oh, it's disgusting.
But I think the judiciary's gone off the rails, as well as the police and local government and almost every organ of the state. And we're not going to get it back unless we all get together and we say we're not going to have it. So that's really what I think we're trying to get to. But if people could just be patient, because there are only a few of us, we you know, people have been very generous in signing up, and we've obviously got some money now, but this is going to require funding.
Yes.
It's going to require money. You can't do this. As you know, I give my salary to charity. I'm not in this to make any money. I've got plenty of money. I don't need any money. But we do need money to fund the machine. Whereas I call it, we need ammo.
Yes.
Ammo to basically drive what we're doing. And the ammo is cash.
And unfortunately, that's just the way of the world.
It is.
So let's talk about the response. So we've covered the public response, which has been insanely positive and much swifter than I really expected at all. I mean, when you dropped that video, it was a big surprise to everyone, and it was a brilliant video, and everyone was like, oh my God, this is exactly what I want. I mean, I don't know. My favorite was this American commentator called Asmongold. He's just...
Well, my wife and I had a huge laugh watching him.
He was very funny.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
His comment...
He's asked me onto his podcast.
I know. He's just said... This guy's saying everything that I want, as if this is some sort of miracle solution to politics.
Well, he put it on hold.
Yeah.
Wow.
But this is the miracle solution. Just do what people actually want done. This is all that we're asking for. And the good thing about what you've done is you have a very strong track record of actually doing things. Unlike certain other politicians who say, well, I'm going to hold a rape gang inquiry and then do nothing. You have actually done these things.
That is a good case in point. I mean, to me, claiming a headline and then doing nothing is just dishonest. So I sat next to Nigel when he said, I will have this inquiry. And he went on all the radio and TV and podcast platforms to tell everybody he was going to do it. And then he didn't do it. So I thought, I was in the chamber when you said that. We're going to do it. Mm. So we did it.
Yeah.
And I have to say, as I said, two of the least enjoyable weeks of my life.
I was following it very closely.
We are going to be, and people say we should have live streamed it. And I go, well, we couldn't live stream it because people were breaking down in tears.
Yeah.
And for all your prurient interest in watching other people in discomfort, we're not going to have that. For welfare reasons, we decided.
It may also have put people off.
No live streaming, but we will release the footage of it when it's fair. And we are going to write a big report. Graham Smith, who's a fantastic guy, who's, you know, bravely. A barrister, he's going to write a report, and it will be hard hitting, I can tell you, Carl.
Good man.
And it is going to highlight exactly what's been going on.
Good man.
So none of these little, what I call, walk along the other side of the street looking the other way merchants who are, which they've been doing for 25 years. And this is what made me decide we need a new party. not a movement. That there is, I just decided that the fabric that we've got to work with isn't going to do the job. So we need something new. And look, it's a huge undertaking. Do I need it at my age? Not really. Would I, as I said in my speech on Friday, would I rather be sitting on a beach in Monaco? Possibly.
But the country needs it.
Somebody's got to do it.
The country needs it.
And somebody's got to unite the country, because this is a great country and we've got great people. And you know what? We're losing loads of them.
But the thing,
loads of young people come to me. I'm going to Asia. I'm going to real economies where people can see growth. They get rewarded for enterprise, rewarded for risk taking. They get rewarded for making a contribution. Do we hear? You know, in Ayn Rand terms, I think we're nearly where John Galt was in Atlas Shrugged, which is my favorite book. We've talked about this before.
Yeah.
But you talk to most people who never heard of Ayn Rand. No. Well, Ayn Rand, you know, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged, two of the best books you can read.
So, I've just paid my taxes, obviously, and I just hate the government. I hate the state. There's nothing more radicalizing than seeing the amount of, because you can break it down to exactly how many months in the year that you are working for the government.
Well, it's getting longer and longer.
And it's don't get me started. Right, let's.
And by the way, on the Public Accounts Committee, where I challenge these permanent secretaries and these civil servants, the waste is off the scale. It's off the scale.
Rupert, and the public, radicalized
needs,
enough,
the public
please.
Needs to know that those taxes that they pay are not, definitively, not being put to good use. They are being wasted, or as I prefer to say, spunked up on the wall. So literally, it's not clever. And they don't care. These people don't care. They get huge pensions, much bigger than the
private
sector.
There's no accountability.
Sector. They work less hours. They have less stress. They have more holidays. I honestly, the arrogance that you see from these people and the dishonesty is just off. It's off the scale.
Mm. So, right. Getting back to the political environment in which Restore has found itself, I can't help but notice that it's caused chaos in the political discourse of the country, because the people, I've noticed that there are a lot of people on the left who have seen you with a fair amount of trepidation, but there's not a lot they can do about it, because they of course can't make a single argument against anything that you're saying and arguing yourself, because you've already begun from a position of these people are destroying the country and they want ruination. And so everything they want, we are against, and we're going to go the opposite way. So the main primary contender, I think, in the immediate moment is the parties on the right, which, no one talks about the Conservatives anymore. So unfortunately, no one cares what they think. But it's been very apparent that the Reform Party have been very shaken by this. They look very nervous. They've had some very poor responses to you. And their activists seem to be completely drowned out by yours. What are your thoughts?
Can we talk about the Conservatives? Because I think that's quite important. I think Kemi is a very good lady. Sure. And she did, and I gave her credit, she did come out in support of our rape gang inquiry. Mm-hmm. She's got a problem, though, and it's a big problem, because the British public are not going to forgive the Tories for failing to deliver for them with an 80-seat majority. I mean, the power that Boris had to become the engineer for change and restoration was huge, and he actually did less than nothing.
Well, he betrayed us.
He presided over mass legal immigration as well as illegal immigration. I think he's a journalist. I don't think he's a man of principle. I think he basically looks at the story, writes the story, and moves on. I don't think he's got a principle bone in his body. And yet, you know, he's incredibly popular with the British people, but he let them down. So they're not going to forgive, I don't think, the Tory party for that. Equally, the Tory party, as a result of Cameron's selection policies, is full of people who aren't necessarily Tories by your definition or my definition. But what I would say is there are some very good young Tories. And because of the movement, I've got to know a lot of them, and I have a huge amount of respect for them. They could make a contribution. They're largely new intake. They share a lot of the vision that we put forward for Restore Britain. Mm. And ultimately, they're going to have to make the decision as to what they do with their careers. But so I don't hate the Tory party. I think Kemi and the current crop of Tories are victims of history and victims of people who failed to deliver for the British public. And over a long period of time. So Cameron played a part, you know, with his selection policies. You know, he adored Tony Blair and he emulated him. So that's not... Tony Blair is the root of a lot of the evil that we've currently got. I watched a documentary on him last night. And, you know, the older he gets, the more he looks like the devil with that white hair and those piercing eyes. I can't help but get the image of Beelzebub out of my mind. So look, I mean...
That's very true.
I mean, reform, I would have helped Nigel become Prime Minister. I thought Nigel shared what I wanted to achieve. When he says I wasn't a team player, I was. I drove reform support. I just got on with it. And, you know, I didn't demand anything. I was cut out of press conferences. I wasn't included. I think the rot started when I gave that speech in September 24 at the conference where Nigel, I said to him about a week before the conference, at the NEC, I think there were about 4,500 people there. It was September 24, just after we'd been elected. And I said to Nigel, do you want to read my speech? Because I write my speeches. I like to put a few quotes and a bit of historical context into it. No, I never read a speech. I never write a speech. So I don't want to read your speech. I said, well, look, you know, if you don't read my speech, you don't know what's in it. So after I spoke for 23 minutes and I wrote the speech myself. I put in everything I believe about Tony Blair, about everything from 20 mile an hour limits to DEI. It's all there. That's Arlo political philosophy. So if anybody hasn't seen it, watch that. If you want to know what I think, it's all in there. Quotes, everything. And I don't deliver a speech as well as Nigel because I he's good at that. That's his, you know, as I say, he's a good ballroom entertainer. He can stand up on his back two legs and if you listen to what he says, most of it's the same, but it's just put in a different way and it's, you know, he's good at it. I don't like all the balloons and the razzmatazz and all the other malarkey.
I feel like I'm in a Butlin's.
All the other malarkey that goes with it. Yeah. I don't like all that tacky stuff, but that's what he likes. So that's what he does. So, you know, the issue yesterday, I think, or day before, he was saying I'd failed at WH Ireland. Well, I didn't. I sold my shares at £1.40 when I left in 2015. And I saw the other day they'd been taken over at 3p a share. So that hasn't gone too well for people since I left. Southampton, I built the Youth Academy. I built the stadium. I had sold Theo Walcott, which is largely why the fans turned on me, who I'd created, having bought him from Swindon for £2,000. Sold him to Arsenal for £12 million. And he's a great boy. You know, he was, I liked him very much, as Gareth Bale and Adam Lallana. And, you know, you can go on. You know, we actually set the academy up because I'm a sportsman. I played reasonably competitive hockey. I love sport. And the best day of my life was when we got to the cup final in 2003. Sadly, we lost to Arsenal 1-0. Could have won that one. So, look, also, he said I failed there. I didn't. I never sued him. When he stood down in all the Tory seats and he left me in a Labour seat in Dudley North, and you know, people of Dudley North are great people, Black Country, very, very good people.
Oh, yeah.
Been very badly let down by various post-war governments, proud people, and I probably had a good chance of winning it. But equally, when Nigel stood down, it was a Labour seat by 23 votes. So when Nigel stood down, I had a decision to make. And he stood down unilaterally. It was his decision, nobody else. Nigel doesn't discuss anything, he just does what he wants. Yep. It's a dictatorship. So as you can see from even recently when he announced his shadow cabinet, they're all there. I mean, you know, Nigel's there at the center of it all. None of them really say very much. So basically, you know, he attacked me, said I sued him, I didn't sue him. When I stood down, I told Tice, who was chairman, Tice failed to tell Nigel, and Nigel then blew up when I stood down. And Ian Austin had told me with 23 vote majority Labour had there, I would have split the vote and let in a momentum Labour candidate, which I didn't want to do. He went on to, I said, look, Nigel, you can't keep saying these things. They're just wrong. I told Richard, I don't want to go through the history of it. I know the history is good enough for me. But what he said yesterday was, was not only factually inaccurate, it was just petty and wrong. And what it shows me is that, to your point, they are worried. They are worried. And they created this situation when he tried to politically assassinate me. Not just say to me, you're not for me, go and sit behind us as an independent. And as Ayub Khan said the other day, watch the rubbish build up in front of you, which I thought was a great line.
It was a good line.
That I would have accepted. But no, two false witness statements that are arguably illegal. My gun's taken away, accused of bullying, accused of early onset dementia. I mean, this was a real proper hit job.
It was absolutely traditionally Nigel.
Hit job of the first order. And I say to people now, look, I survived it. A lot of people didn't. Stephen Wolfe didn't. Kilroy Silk didn't. There's a great list of people who haven't survived it. I've survived it and I've marched on. But the question I would say to people is, can you really trust somebody? And he let the mask slip in his speech when he said he had to get rid of me because of my views on immigration, which again, he misquoted me on.
Yes.
I have never said whole communities of British passport holders should be deported. I've never said that.
No.
That is just utter rubbish.
Well, you
and
said,
he knows it. He knows it, but he's just trying to, you know, create some histrionic headline. It's drivel.
Well, you said to deport people who knew about the grooming gangs, as in people who were complicit in the grooming
gangs.
He
tried to edit my speech in Northwest Essex. He tried, and I spent 20 minutes in a hotel room with him because he tried to get his little man of 24 to tell me to edit my speech. I said, no, I'm not taking it from you. If Nigel wants me to change my speech, he needs to tell me himself. So we went up into a hotel room, tried to take the word mass out of deportation, which I was talking about. You can watch the speech. It's the one in Northwest Essex at the end of January 25, which he asked me to go and speak at, by the way. Gives you about 3 days' notice and expects you to go and speak. So I did speak. And the other thing he tried to take out was where I said that if you are a part of a family who is living with a Pakistani Muslim rapist who's been raping and abusing underage, vulnerable, white, working-class English girls on a consistent basis, which he knows has been happening from the rape gang inquiry, then if you're a dual national or you are a foreign national and you knew about this evil, then you should be deported. He wanted me to take that out of my speech. I said, no, I'm not taking that out. I took out the word mass. And now I find it quite entertaining that Zia Yusuf's talking about mass deportation. The very things that they arguably politically assassinated me over, they're now saying themselves.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, two of my lads, Dan Tubbs and Bo Dade, were standing as Reform candidates until they quoted the Reform Manifesto and the Reform top brass said, nope, you're out of the party now because this has created a headline. And it's like, but it's in your manifesto. Like, that you're going to deport every illegal immigrant in the country. That's in your manifesto. And Bo got kicked out of the party for saying that.
I know. Well,
it's ridiculous.
But I think, as you say, Nigel does shift and change and, you know, he does it to get a headline. I mean, look, I don't really want to talk about reform. I'm more interested in providing the British people with, I mean, I know the truth. That's good enough for me. If people trust me, they should be able to see the truth. If they can't, then tough. I mean, nothing I can do about that.
Yeah.
But if they want change, let's not worry about them. You know, I personally don't think they treated their branches very well, which is why a lot of the local councillors
abominable. It's famous.
They were treated like sort of. I mean, these are people who are doing it voluntarily. They care about their community. They care about the local council. Give them, as you say, delegate some power to them.
Let them get on with it.
Not treat them as if they're numpties.
Oh, they treat them as if they're a hindrance.
Correct.
As if they don't want them.
And you know, suddenly, this is Zia Yusuf business. I don't know where he came from. And I said to Nigel, look, he's come in. He's putting in, you know, I've put in quite a lot of money. I paid for my own candidacy in Kingswood. I paid for my own candidacy in Great Yarmouth. I got no support from the party. I chose to go to Great Yarmouth. Richard Tice chose Boston. And, you know, the achievement was that we all broke into Parliament. That was a huge achievement for all of us. But I've put in probably over the years, if you take all my political attempts to save the pound through the referendum party, to Business for Stirling, to Vote Leave, to my campaign for the Brexit Party, I've put a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of energy into it. So I said to Nigel, he said he was thinking of appointing him chairman, having removed Richard as leader and made him chairman. He was then removing Richard as chairman and making use of chairman. And now I think Richard's got some sort of sideline job in the cabinet as you know, business and whatever else. But look, Yusuf appeared and I said, no, why do we need to bring somebody in now? We've done all the work. Mm. We've created this, a group of us. Why do you want to bring in a potential free radical? And I checked him out. You know, he's not a great guy. I never threatened him. We had an argument because he tried to mess around with my branch in Great Yarmouth.
Yeah.
So I said to him before a meeting, I said, Zia, last time I checked, there were 650 MPs in Parliament. We've got five of them. When you've got the other 645 constituencies running on rails, then you can start messing around in my constituency. Till then, sex and travel. That's what I said to him. And he didn't like that.
Yeah.
So that's what played the part. But look, let's not talk about reform, Carl. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about...
I think their support is waning fast. I think people can see that hiring Tories who are associated with past failures, and I'm just waiting for him to appoint Nadeem Zahawi as foreign secretary. That we hear could be a possibility.
Yes.
You know, honestly, who wants Nadeem Zahawi? Who wants Nadine Dorries? Who wants even Jenrick, who's involved with a lot of this stuff, and Suella, who was Home Secretary? I mean, they're, Jenrick and Braverman, their signature was on the Bibby Stockholm deal.
Yeah.
The contract.
Well, Nadine Dorries.
$1.5 billion down the gurgler.
Yeah.
The Bibby Stockholm is now a state liability because nobody knows what to do with it.
Yeah, Nadine Dorries drafted the online harms bill, didn't she? Oh, the safety bill.
So
it's just, why would you want
to? I mean, she's
people?
Been very unpleasant about me. I don't know the woman, and I frankly, thank goodness.
But Nadeem Zahawi was the architect of the vaccine passports that thankfully never came to fruition.
COVID, not start me on COVID.
Yeah, well, exactly.
You and I rudely agree on COVID.
Oh,
I mean,
completely.
The decision making over COVID by the Tories.
Barbaric.
Again, you argue that it might be linked to organised crime because the dishing out of all these contracts and the enriching of so many people with no justification for it, and the damage they did to the young children, and the actual sort of misallocation of money everywhere, was just staggering.
Yeah.
And now they don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to talk about it.
So what I'd like to talk about to end then is what's next? What's going on now? What's the next plan for us?
Well, we've got to build, and as I say, give people the opportunity to vote for something new.
Mm.
And if they vote for something new and they deliver us the mandate in Parliament and we get these wonderful people working bottom up as well, which is incredibly important too, as you say,
mm-hmm.
we can all become the catalyst for the change that's so badly needed. But if everybody's happy with all the rules and the regulations and the tax they're paying and the abuse they get from state bodies and local government bodies and the failures of the post office and the failures of inflected blood scandal and the COVID response and all of the things that are plaguing Britain, then fine, look, vote for more of that. I mean, I'm trying to change that.
Mm.
Now, I think it's an important point, this, and I said it in my speech. It isn't going to be easy, Carl, but in the same way that I don't think Britain voted for Brexit, which, by the way, hasn't been delivered, for financial reasons, they voted for Brexit for sovereignty reasons. And with sovereignty, I mean, in the end, if it had been handled properly, it would bring financial benefits. But in the short term, they knew that was not going to follow. And if you vote for me, I'm not offering you a financial nirvana. I'm not offering you anything other than slightly a hair shirt in the short term, because we've all had too much what I call pretense and false living, too much quantitative easing, too much self-delusion. And we've got to really now get down and start to do what made this country great, and that is work. Work if you can. Invest, take risk. Reward people who take risk and succeed. Don't tax people if they build up a fortune. I want people to be rich. I want them to be independent. I want them to be high-minded. I don't want to take their farms or their businesses off them. I don't want Larry Fink buying up Britain. I want Britain to be a nation of people, as we were when we annoyed Napoleon so much. I want them to be a nation of principles, of people who have an interest in the country, a stake in the country. I don't want statism. I hate it. I don't want central planning. I don't want Fabianism. I don't want Pavloism. I want individualism. I want to be a nation of principles who care about the country, who aren't always going to agree, who will have honest debate with each other. That's what Parliament should be. And when we get 649 other people in Parliament, we're not going to agree on everything. But all we've got to agree on is that we want our country back. That's the initial place to start. And then you have the debates. Once you put the nation first, and then you put your petty squabbles second, and you in Parliament argue that Carl's constituency deserves this and Rupert's doesn't and somebody else's might have a better claim on it than yours. And that's how Parliament used to work. But they were all people who had a stake in Britain. You know, that's... So I don't know where it's going to go, but I think I've got a hunch we can win. My team didn't think we'd win in Great Yarmouth, which we did. They actually have a much greater confidence in our success now. So it's not really my success. It'll be the people's success, because I think it's the people who, if they want change, will vote for it. Now, we've obviously got people in society who are freeloading, who are living on the back of honest, tax-paying, law-abiding citizens. They're not going to want it because they're pork-barreling. And I don't want their vote because, you know, if you're not prepared to work, don't vote for me, because I'm going to reward work. I'm going to reward enterprise. I'm going to reward risk-taking. And I want a society that looks after the most vulnerable. We must do that. We've always done that. Even when we had virtually no government, you had the friendly societies, and there was always a network of support for those people in genuine need. What I don't want is a society that rewards shirkers who sign themselves off with back pain or headaches or whatever. Doctors who give people sick notes for nothing. I just don't want all that. I want honesty. And I want honesty. I want hard work. I want the return of the Protestant ethic. I want Max Weber, the spirit of, what was it? The spirit of capitalism, Protestant ethic and the spirit of capitalism. Max Weber, great book, another book for people to read. But so that's me. I'm not complex, Carl. I'm pretty straightforward. And, you know, I'm not what you see is what I am.
Thanks so much for joining me.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at chumbacasino.com.